Welcome to Today on Broadway for Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tamanini.
I'm Tell Me on a Sunday podcast, Grace Aki.
Grace, you got room on your calendar for one more?
Matt, you know I don't, but here we are, baby.
Here we are. We're going to dive into that news because we've been telling you one more show was coming to Broadway this season, and it in fact is. We will dive into that just momentarily, but I still owe you all the second half of my interview with the great Angie Schwor. That will be coming, I promise, tonight, Tuesday, after we are recording. I'm going to see the national tour of Jagged Little Pill, which is always a feel-good, heartwarming time, if I have to say so myself. But I will get the rest of that interview into a Patreon-exclusive episode that will show up in your feeds ever so shortly. So make sure that you sign up at the mezzanine tier and above at patreon.com/BroadwayRadio or broadwayradio.com/Patreon. Now, Grace, we've been teasing it, then we were reporting it, and now it is in fact official that Illinois will be coming to Broadway this season. Like, this season that ends in like 5 weeks, it's coming to Broadway in a theater that has a show until April 7th. The Sufjan Stevens dance musical will open up cold at Broadway's St. James Theater on April 24th. What that means is it opens on April 24th. The eligibility deadline is the 25th, but it opens on April 24th. The first performance is April 24th. There will not be any previews for this show. Of course, they are just transferring within a couple of weeks from the run of the Park Avenue Armory. This will be a strictly limited engagement running through August 10th. The show was inspired by Stevens' album Illinois and is directed and choreographed by Justin Peck, and it features a story that Peck created with Pulitzer Prize winner Jackie Sibbles-Drury. The show announced its cast. It is pretty much everybody from the Park Avenue Armory and the previous Chicago Shakespeare Theater productions, including some of my favorite dancers and So You Think You Can Dance alums like Gabby Diaz, Ricky Ubeda, and a bunch of other really talented folks. I will note that Robbie Fairchild, who was in the off-Broadway run, was not listed. I don't know if that means he is not going to be in it or if they're going to make some sort of splashy announcement of him because he's a fairly well-known name with a separate press release. I don't know, but he was not in the press release that was sent out on Tuesday. Now, so just to remind you, Spamalot is playing at the St. James until April 7th. Illinois will be beginning performances on the 24th. So that's like 17 days later, 2.5 weeks. So they will have to unload Spamalot, which is not a huge set by any means, and then bring in Illinois in, I mean, perhaps record time, Grace. But it seems to me that as crowded as this season is, it does feel like we have yet to have a show that is the runaway leader for Best Musical like we did with Kimberly Akimbo last year. That was practically a foregone conclusion for the entire season. Part of the reason for that this year is because I think that there's actually a lot of shows that could contend for it, but there isn't anything that has laid down a flag either because it's already begun on Broadway or because of its out-of-town tryout and said, this is our award, no one can take it. So it does feel like Illinois is saying, the field is pretty clear right now. We're coming off a massively sold out, record high ticket price off-Broadway run. We could come in over the summer, but no one will remember us by the time next year's Tonys come, or we could wait and squander the momentum. So if you're gonna do it, like, I guess it makes sense. It's crazy, and we very rarely see anything like this. Also, the St. James is bigger than I have said that I would put that in, but it's sold the crap out of the Park Avenue Armory at really high ticket prices. So I guess it makes sense because of how weird this season is, despite the fact that there's like 175 new musicals in this season, Grace.
Exactly. I think that what we're seeing is they're striking while the iron's hot, and it makes sense. Like, I think when you go on StubHub or whatever, and then you're seeing resale tickets at $800 that people are paying just to see this at Park Avenue Armory, like, why wouldn't you, you know, try to do what you can? The St. James is an enormous theater. There's no question how difficult it is to sell in general. But I think that when you have the momentum of this moment and the fact that it is probably the most different offering that you've got in terms of the Broadway landscape. Like, I think it's awesome. It makes sense to me. I was dying to see it. I knew I probably wouldn't get to see it at the Park Avenue Armory, and here we are, April 24th. Hopefully I'll be sat in that audience. So I think it's great. Especially, the week after. Oh gosh, no. The same weekend that we have, I think, five or six Broadway shows opening. So, it is what it is, but it's awesome.
Yeah, it is absolutely crazy and hectic. And I'm going to pull up my other list because I normally, on my spreadsheet, I list it by first preview date. I'm going to pull up another list that has the opening dates. So just from the 24th on, I'm just going to do those. We have Hell's Kitchen, Illinois, The Great Gatsby, The Heart of Rock and Roll, Cabaret, Mary Jane, The Mother Play, Patriots, and Uncle Vanya. So those are all the shows that are opening on the 20th through the 25th. That is a mad dash. And like, I do wonder, and this is not something I think that can really be taken into account from the marketing and press teams and producing teams, but like, because we know how important the critical responses are for some of these shows, like, I do wonder if like loading all of the shows up at the end might end up leading to critic fatigue and like being a little worn down, so the reviews aren't as strong as they might be. A lot of these shows probably aren't necessarily the ones that are relying as much on the critics, I guess, because some of them are really big shows, but some of them are things that would probably benefit really well from a nice write-up in the New York Times or Vulture or somewhere else. But I don't think that's something that anyone is really worrying about when they are scheduling opening nights, but it certainly is something that I think in this season especially is something to keep an eye on.
I'm scared. I'm scared. But you know what? To your point, I think that and we kind of talked about this when we were predicting and not predicting, that the fallout of any potential like awards or staying power and things like that. I don't think that we're seeing a wash. Like, I don't think that we're seeing a behemoth, take all prisoners or whatever type of scenario from any one show. I think that you might see some technicals here. You might see some performances here and there. You might see, best musical from a show that gets no wins in the arts. You don't know. So I think that the more is more, the more is merrier. And here we are.
That actually is something that super excites me for this Tony season and Tony race, because it is something where I feel like we could see awards, I guess not even just awards, but like awards spread out between a bunch of different shows. But then that also leads to some really competitive categories where it feels like over the last few years, a lot of them have been pretty obvious. And that might still end up being the case. Maybe there are some things that break through and win all the precursor awards, so we know exactly what's going to happen on Tony Sunday. But I do feel like there are some things that could go down to the wire and it might be nip and tuck the entire way. And that's fun. That's exciting. If you're going to have a crazy packed season like this, at least give us some extra entertainment value when it comes to award season. All right, let's dive into last week's Broadway grosses, Grace. The spring break was starting to become fairly good for Broadway. Overall, we did pick up one new show, and that, of course, was the very first preview of The Outsiders. We will get to that here in just a second. But in total, Broadway increased its grosses by 14%, coming in at $28,059,463. Attendance also saw a 7% increase to 219,954 people, and the average ticket price was at $127.57. In total, 13 of the 25 shows on Broadway, and that really should only be 13 of 24 because The Outsiders only had one performance, but 13 shows were north of seven figures in the $1 million club, and 21 of 25 were over 90% capacity, which is really a good sign for a lot of things. But spring break really did help because we had not one, not two, but three shows above $2 million last week. They were led by The Lion King at $2,110,037. Wicked came in at 2.1 million, and Hamilton was at just over 2 million. In fourth place was Merrily We Roll Along at 1.6, and then MJ at 1.55. The rest of the shows north of seven figures in descending order were Moulin Rouge, Sweeney Todd at seven performances, which, do we need to revisit why this is closing, Grace? Like, it's still doing really well. And obviously some of that has to do with the Tveit fans and the Sutton Foster fans, but like, it still seems like it's probably making its weekly nut. So is that a conversation we need to have at some point?
No, I think get out while it's good. You know, okay. I don't see why we're having to push things if that was the life expectancy of what that team wanted. You know, it's already extended past what they already agreed to do. So I think that anything past that is renegotiations, and it's a horse of a different color. And I think that they set out to do a limited run, and the fact that they've gone longer is good. But sometimes people, that was the project, like, let them go.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And certainly when you start to get into like casting new people, you have to start paying out for rehearsals more and things like that. So there are more, additional economic factors. But when you're making, you know, close to $1.5 million a week on 7 performances, it does seem like the business side of people would want to keep that going. But you are very right. Continuing there, also above $1 million is Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, Aladdin, Back to the Future, Hadestown, and Juliet, and the Book of Mormon. The first preview of The Outsiders, again, just one show, brought in $149,970. If you extrapolate that to 8 shows for an entire week, that is just under $1.2 million. A very good week for a new musical in previews, as word of mouth is just getting out. I will note that in Enemy of the People had a fairly significant decline last week because it was open and there were so many tickets that were comped for press and for, you know, invited people and all that stuff. But it was still at $972,188, just the first show under the $1 million threshold. So that is a show that continues to sell well. And I would imagine with all of the great reviews that we talked about on yesterday's show, Grace, that will only continue to go up. All right, let's get into some show and casting news here. Grace, speaking of one of the shows north of $1 million, Back to the Future, they have announced the 2 leads that will take the show out on its North American tour that will begin performances in June at the Playhouse Square in Cleveland. Don Stevenson will play the role of Doc Brown, and Marty McFly will be played by newcomer Caden Brausch. Additional casting will be announced in the coming days and weeks. The tour is set to play 25 cities over the 2024-2025 season, with more dates to be added. All right, Grace, this is something that I think is perfectly in your wheelhouse, and I want your comments and thoughts on this. Because very early on in the pandemic, one of the social media accounts that began to show up everywhere on my feeds, especially because I was still on the TikTok at the time, was Costin Mayer. And recently, I know because I've seen it regurgitated on Instagram Reels, they did a little video about with doing something to one of the Waitress songs. Well, it seems like there was a reason for that, because the TikTok dancers, who are a real life husband and wife team, Austin and Meredith Talenko, they are going to choreograph the show not only at the La Mirada Theater, but also at the Algonquin Playhouse this season. I believe the Algonquin is going to be the actual first regional run of the show anywhere. These two met while they were dancing, I believe, at a theme park and started dating, and then eventually got married and became pretty big on social media. They are tons of fun. They often just do things in their sweats and socks in their living room, but I know that they have gained a huge following, and I think this is kind of fun. This is a cool thing to kind of bring in folks who have a social media following into a production with them not actually being the performers that audiences will see on stage, Grace.
You know, this is not the first collaboration of, you know, a viral sensation like Keone and Mari Madrid choreographing for the theater. Algonquin Playhouse will be, I think, the first one, I think followed by the Muni. So this is so exciting. They posted a teaser and I posted it, and, you know, you, me, and Rebecca, our mutual, was like freaking out about it. And they are just so fabulous. And this is the type of thing that if we are going to engage with not only content creators that have creative vision and, you know, artistic license, that this is how you do it. And they can also like help leverage their dance following, and people can like stitch their video. I mean, it's a campaign move, one. Two, it's also like these people are, you know, paid creators. Like they are professional choreographers. So this is just a brilliant way to do it. I couldn't think of a more perfect show to start with. I can't wait to see more from them. And I will be there. Algonquin's one of my favorite places to visit. They have hot dogs down the road that are so good.
Rudy's Hot Dogs, all that shout matters. Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know why I'm there. Come on. It's not for the art. I saw the regional premiere of Escape to Margaritaville. I and
remember.
I went for that and the hot dogs. So it was amazing, and I can't wait to see what they do with this one.
And I mean, really, their style, and I'm sure they can do lots of styles, but the style that they put out on social media is vaguely reminiscent of Lauren Lotaro's original choreography with how some of the short, intricate staccato movements come across. So I would be very interested to see them not only do this show, which is a show that I obviously love, but also hopefully do more work in the musical theater space moving forward. All right, I've got a couple feel-good recommendations, Grace, and one of them is one that you told us was going to be awesome, and it was in fact awesome. And it is Mackenzie Kurtz performing Hit Me Like a Hammer on the Jimmy Kimmel Show on Monday night. I did not recognize the song. I don't think I know that song as much as I love Huey Lewis. But again, it goes back to what I talked about before. This is a show tune. Like, this is so obviously a show tune in the words and in the lyrics that it's shocking to me that it was originally released as a pop song. But
Yeah,
great
like
performance.
literally when you hear, you know, it hit me like a hammer, like you like from Huey, you would never ever go, that's the same song. But I find this a lot with shows that can actually transcend into being a musical theater canon. You're like, wait, sorry, it sounded like this when it was on the radio. I'm curious if other shows that are in that jukebox vein have a similar feel to it, that when they actually genuinely change the arrangements and don't just kind of like stick to it. I felt that way when I heard Brandon Victor Dixon's version of an Alicia Keys song that he sings in Hell's Kitchen, because I didn't recognize it at first and I went, oh shit, he's singing that song. And I really
I
like
know
when that
exactly
happens. It's a
which one you're
pleasant.
talking about.
I know you know. So yeah, I think it's interesting, and it makes it more interesting for the viewer. Like, I don't want to hear you try to do an impression of that singer doing that song. If I did, I'd be at home with Spotify. I want to see something else.
And it's even worse than that. Like, I would sometimes take an actor doing it the way the original did, but that's not what we get. We get musical theater performers trying to do it the way that they did. And it's just a completely different singing style with the enunciation and the clarity and the vibrato. You know, a lot of rock stuff is gravelly and growly and glottally. And or just glottal, I think is probably the adjective version of that. But I would much rather, if you're gonna do it, change the song so it sounds like a show tune. I think that serves the actors better. But so that one's that. And then we have another one to recommend, and this one comes from the new musical Redwood that began its sold-out world premiere production at the La Jolla Playhouse last month. It is currently scheduled to run through the end of this month, and it stars someone you all might have heard of named Idina Menzel, and she is singing a song from the show called Great Escape. This features music by Kate Diaz and lyrics by Diaz and the writer and director Tina Landau. So check that one out. Anytime you have Idina Menzel doing a show, there is always a possibility that it will end up having a life beyond whatever out-of-town tryout it has. So you can definitely watch both of those in the show notes. All right, everybody, that's all that we have for today. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Broadway Radio, and you can follow me pretty much anywhere at BWW Matt. Grace, where can people find you?
You can find me at It's Grace Aki.
All right, everybody, have a wonderful Wednesday, and we'll be back to talk to you tomorrow.